I'm Shelley Palmer.
I'm Ross Martin.
And you're listening to Think About This.
Today, how to stay positive in this new normal.
And we're going to try and talk a little bit about what you can do to help your business survive in the crisis.
So welcome to Think About This.
The more you stay inside,
the more lives you're likely to save.
Hi, everybody. It's Danny DeVito. And I'm asking you from the bottom of my heart, stay home. We got this virus, this pandemic. Young people can get it, and they can transmit it to old people. The next thing you know, I'm out of there.
So, Ross, I was thinking about something. I always look at somebody's side hustle when they come to apply for a job more than I look at their resume, because I always want to know, like, where their entrepreneurial spirit is and what they're doing on the side, what their passion projects are. So we are at unemployment levels that are unprecedented in recent memory, and so many businesses are shuttering or being forced to shutter, and so many people are being laid off. I thought to myself, well, we should do something to help people take their side hustle and actually turn it into value creation for them, for their families, as a primary source of income. And then it occurred to me, if you're not working and nobody's working, then what is the side hustle that allows you to feed your family? And I got a little bit depressed about that.
Look, we're living in a reality where most state and local governments have already made a decision about which businesses are essential. And that word essential is really tricky. You try telling a mom and pop shop, it's a copy store, a local coffee shop, anything. You try telling those people that they can't come to work tomorrow. They have to stop doing business because their business is not essential. And it's not just heartbreaking. It's a situation where millions of families are entering financial ruin as we speak. And your side hustle isn't going to save you.
No, that I think was the realization I came to, that no matter how good your side hustle is, you're not going to be able to feed your family with it, because if it was more than a passion project, it would have already become your primary thing, and now it's unlikely to be. So that was the depressing side. Then there was the less depressing side, which was, this is the perfect time to get great at your side hustle, whatever that is. And I think what's going to happen first are those who have the ability to create cottage industries, ways to create value for your local village, if you will, for your immediate area.
Right.
If you can bake, if you can mow grass, if you can, like, if you can fix stuff that's, you know, probably it's a complete reversal of what it means to be an alpha and what it means to be a beta in our society.
We're seeing that more acutely in the city, but where I am right now in Maine, the economy is doing what it does. It's actually mostly filled with tradespeople, and they continue to do their work. The disruption to, you know, the food and beverage industry here is certainly felt, but in Maine they've already adapted. Everything is by the side of the road now. Everyone's got a lemonade stand, and some of them are selling incredible steaks, and some of them are selling incredible baked goods. But this economy is, in Maine, rural Maine, so resilient. It already is behaving as a village. In the city,
yeah,
radically different situation. And I would love to see what you're saying play out there.
Well, I don't know. Where I am, I'm also kind of out of the beaten path, or off the beaten path right now. I'm up in Vermont, and up here, it's very much the same as you've described in Maine, a lot of tradespeople. This is an entire economy at this point based on tourism. The governor just said that no Airbnbs, no short-term rentals could be done.
Yep.
For the foreseeable future, devastating all of the people who thought they were going to be able to rent their houses and their, you know, their weekend houses to people who are trying to.
Oh, that's,
it's all done.
That's done.
So yep. Who's up here?
Yep.
It's the plumbers and the carpenters. And it's interesting. There's some repair work in and around. People are doing the normal work they would do, repairing their decks. New roofs are being replaced. And that entire group is still working, which I don't know if that's even safe. Some of them are working with masks on, which is fascinating. But one way or the other, you're right. This is a resilient kind of economy because there are so many people that do what you and I would consider tradecraft, right? They're doing not knowledge work, if you will. So for us knowledge workers, this is a rude shock to the system.
First of all, I love the way you're thinking about this. Imagine that your village, if you're living in New York or Chicago or Miami or Atlanta, let's say your village is your high rise, your condominium.
Yeah.
Whether you live in the projects or you live in the penthouse on Central Park West, that shit doesn't matter anymore. You're locked in a very tall building with hundreds and sometimes thousands of other families. And the question is, what value can you add to that community? Are we looking at hyper-local economies that are building by building instead of city by city?
So when I think optimistically, when I let myself be me as opposed to post-apocalyptic me, but if I let myself just be the normal, super optimistic.
I've been waiting for this moment for a year. For you to just be you and not post-apocalyptic you in your pajamas.
If I let myself be me, I believe that not only will we get through this, but that this on a macro level mimics the way so many of us have evolved throughout our careers. We are forged in failure. We overcome things and we learn from it and we get stronger by overcoming things. And ultimately, you know, we're changed, but you're better for having been through whatever you've been through. That's the optimistic me, that this will pass and we will get there. The post-apocalyptic me is wondering, realistically wondering, is New York City going to be 1970s A-beam New York City with terrible crime and people who are literally unable to feed themselves, which we haven't seen in our lifetime, you and I, not at scale. We know that there are homeless people, we know the people who are hungry, certainly poverty and has been with us for a long time, and it's talked about, but it's not seen at the scale in the United States.
Without question.
So I don't know how that plays. You know, I want to sit here and talk to everyone who's listening, and I want to actually convince myself that the way to get to the future is evolve into a hyper-local economy and create value by doing the things you know how to do, by baking, by building, by assisting and fixing, by creating things that didn't exist but that people need, creating stores of economic value in the most classic, most old-fashioned sense.
I believe it will happen. I do. That's beauty.
I hope that's true. There's another part of me that thinks about you can't walk outside because somebody who is really hungry and has no way to get food is going to want things you have so that they can have food.
Those are not mutually exclusive. What we're going to see is, in my opinion, those tall buildings becoming small towns in and of themselves. The maintenance team taking on new significance, let's say. All of a sudden, you're not going to take your superintendent for granted. And an added layer of complexity because suddenly we actually can't function as a microeconomy without secure borders. And you will start to see armed guards outside the most expensive real estate, protecting those micro communities as if they were a militia. And I get that that's a dystopian way to think and talk about this, but look, I'm up here in Maine, okay? And this is the last place I thought we would see the start of civil unrest. But it is here. If I took a boat, I don't have a boat, but if I took a boat 1 hour out into the ocean and I went straight, I'd hit the island of Vinylhaven, which is where most of the rock for Brooklyn Bridge was sourced.
Hmm.
Now, what happened, not just 3 days ago, is that Vinylhaven became the center of a national news story because some idiots who live on the island saw that a New York license plate car was parked outside one of the houses and it looked like a few friends had fled New York City and rented a spot on this island to just escape the mayhem of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they did. Not a bad idea. Okay. But what those guys did on that island, who lived there year round, they were born and bred in Maine, is they went and they chopped down a tree and they pulled it in front of the driveway and used it to block in the New Yorkers, quarantining them against their will.
Oh.
And the New York guys panicked and called the Coast Guard and it became a whole incident. But it was the very beginning of civil unrest. And it's no different than one island over from that, where a bunch of guys decided to stand on the dock where the ferry comes in. And if you don't live there, but you pulled up on the ferry, they turned you right back around and said, you can't come on our island. That is reality. That's happening now here in idyllic Maine.
It's amazing.
So we are now days away, if that, from this kind of civil unrest, except much, much worse in cities like New York, where if you're a father or a mother and your kid gets sick, or your parent gets sick, or your partner gets sick, you will do whatever you need to do to get care. And now, for people who have connections, they'll try that first. For people who have money, they'll spend whatever it takes. But if you don't have connections and you don't have money, you're not getting to that front of that line. And even if you do, it's probably not going to work. So now we go to DEFCON 3. And that's civil unrest.
Yeah.
And that is, I will do what it takes to protect my children and my family. And no one's getting in the way.
That's right. And since every human being feels that way,
that's right,
we're hardwired to feel that way, this is going to get really crazy really quickly. And the question is levels of madness, and absent leadership on a national level, we are in serious trouble.
Shelley, earlier when we were talking, you were talking about skills workers, and you were referring to the idea of like, okay, you know, maybe I need to rebuild my deck, or maybe I need to fix the windows in my house, or maybe my car's in the garage and now I finally have a chance to actually work on it. I love that idea. I think that whatever it is in your life, or your family, or yourself that needs fixing, now's the time you actually get to focus on that. It's actually so consistent with the advice that I'm giving our clients, many of whom are facing, obviously, an existential crisis unlike anything they've ever seen. I mean, we are now faced with what I would describe as, for SMBs, for small and medium-sized businesses, an extinction event right before our eyes.
Yes, no question.
And right before our eyes, we are watching
mm-hmm.
the new economy take shape. This is the death of the old economy and the birth of the new economy. And it's right here. There's no waiting for it. And in its wake, hundreds of thousands of small and medium-sized businesses are dying. And I know this because as I connect our clients to local and state governments, I was on the phone in the last 48 hours with the offices of the governors of Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey. Today I'm talking to Illinois, Pennsylvania, and the mayor of LA, Eric Garcetti. They are, of course, in urgent need of PPE and any kind of medical supplies they can get their hands on, which we read about in the news every hour. But also, they are responsible for state economies that are collapsing in their laps because hundreds of thousands of small and medium-sized businesses cannot actually survive this. And so as we move into the new economy, the question I think business leaders need to ask themselves if it's possible to even create the space to think about the future of your business as you're trying to save it. What can I do? What should I do? How should I prioritize my thinking about the future of my enterprise, whether it's small, medium, or large? And this is what we're telling them. First and foremost, protect and defend your people and your business at all costs. Second, strengthen your core. And this is what you were talking about earlier, Shelley. Use this time to fix all the things inside your car, your house, yourself that you know need fortifying. Work on all those things that you know you've been leaving because you didn't have to deal with them. Now's the time to actually make yourself as healthy and strong as you possibly can be. And three, prepare to emerge in the new economy. Because when we get back to some sense of normal, the drivers of consumer preference, the drivers of behavior, are all new and different. They're totally different than they were before. And because of those realities in the new economy, some companies are going to be prepared for even greater success. Some will emerge with greater momentum than they had before. And we will see the birth of new leaders across these categories. And that is devastating to think about, all of the destruction they leave behind, all of the companies that just won't make it, all of the business leaders and employees and families that will struggle. And yet a new economy will be born. New leaders will emerge. So Shelley, you're in the same position I am, in that business leaders all over the country are turning to you and asking, what should I do? And when you think about the idea of strengthening the core and preparing to emerge in the new economy, what's your take on what they will need to be able to actually do that?
You know, Ross, you know, like I do, that the entire planet has been built by human beings who are best organized. Everything that's great in the history of the world has been built by brilliant organizations and people who have the ability to organize. And so that's our strength. And you have to ultimately look to the people who got you there. And I think it might be counterintuitive at a time when everybody wants to close ranks and just protect their immediate family and just try to survive today. It's sort of one hand for yourself, one hand for the ship. And I don't think that's the right way to approach this. And I think strengthening your core, the way you describe it, it's a perfect metaphor for dance with the one who brung you. Look at the teams that you've created. Look at the brilliant people around you. Look at the organization you've created. And it may be a different set of skills that take you into the future, as you've described. This may be a very different economy. In fact, it will be a different economy. No matter what, we're going to be in a new world, and it has already started. As a business leader, take stock of what you believe that future will look like. And as harsh as it may sound, look at the people that got you to where you are. Respecting their talents, take a good guess at who's going to be able to help you get to the next level. And rather than cutting these people loose, now is the perfect time to strengthen those bonds, protect the people whose big brains collectively got you where you are. That's the way the business is going to go into the future. Changed, stronger, resolute, responsive, and adaptive. All the things you said. And I think that is the future. And it's going to be really hard for business leaders to do, because with the veil of ignorance, in a vacuum, without considering anybody's feelings, their family, who's sick, who has a medical need, who's got special needs kids, whose circumstance, if you take all of that away and you just look at the assets in the form of the bonds and the brains that you need to organize to get you to the next place, those are going to be some of the toughest business decisions leaders ever make. And the future depends on how well they make them.
Think about that.
You know, Ross, everyone's scared to death right now. People are just frightened out of their wits. And I am unqualified in every way to give any psychological advice whatsoever
about what you should do. And I feel really sad when people ask me, hey, you know, what's your advice for? No, I don't have any advice. But what I can offer up is my own personal view of how I'm dealing with my fear, because I'm as scared as anybody. What I'm doing right now is I get up every day and I try to treat the new normal as normal. My morning routine matters to me, so I try to maintain it as best I can. My daily practice of my business and my outreach to my friends and my colleagues and my clients, I try to maintain that as best I can. I do everything I can to make the world feel like everybody's here today, everybody is safe today, and today is a good day. I never know what tomorrow is going to be. I've never known. No one ever does. So I don't think it helps me personally to worry about what's about to happen, because I have no control over it. But I do have control over today. And that's how I've approached this. Literally the old cliche, one day at a time. I don't know about you, Ross, but from my perspective, it helps me deal with the insanity, because right now I know what is, and I can control one thing in the world, my own actions. Everything else I have to respond to.
I love that. You know, our producer, Robert, texted us, because we're all recording from our home offices, that we needed to find some uplifting message here, because it's very easy to go to a very dark place.
Yeah.
And I'll just tell you from my perspective, what I do on a daily basis to keep myself from going to a dark place is to try to reach out to people who I feel are lonelier than I am, more scared, and less equipped to deal with it. And by calling them and FaceTiming them, and in most cases, I'm talking about people I love who are older, who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, in some cases 90s, who are totally alone. And to survive this, they must remain alone. And so if anyone is looking for a way to find some joy in your day as you're listening to this, call, FaceTime, write a note, send a book, buy a Netflix subscription for somebody that you love and care about who is alone. Those people are probably not people who are listening to our podcast, but you are. And if you are listening to this, give somebody who needs you a call. Ask them how they're doing. Remind them that you love them. Send them flowers, send them a book, send them some love and a kiss and a hug, because right now, more than ever, they need it.
I don't think it gets any better than that.
Ah, come on, bring it in. Virtual group hug for both of you. Take it one day at a time from Shelley and stay in touch with the people you care about from Ross. Not your typical advice you'd expect from hardworking, successful entrepreneurs or technical visionaries, but that's just a small side effect of how this pandemic is forcing us to appreciate the time we do have. And I've noticed people calling me, checking on me. I guess I'm that old guy now. I appreciate you reaching out, Robert, even if it's only to give me more work to do. Besides, I enjoy helping to produce Think About This with Shelley Palmer and Ross Martin. I think I might know less than I did before. I can't wait till our next episode on the Westwood One Podcast Network.